If you have ever been curious about Dungeons & Dragons, or the people who play it, you've come to the right place. Welcome to Ready, Set, Roll Insight, where you will learn how to be a better player and what drew people to the game in the first place. Now, join us for Insight with your host, Daniel Wells.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ready, Set, Roll Insight. I am your host, Daniel Wells, and with me today is a co-host, actually, in the form of Craig, our typical DM of RSR.
Hey, what's up?
And our very special guest today, helping us tackle the topics of homebrew and his show, Dungeons and Randomness, Jason Massey. Yes.
Nailed it. Howdy, everybody. I totally am not redoing this and recorded all my audio the first time, and I'm a professional and I do this for a living, so why would you even ask?
So what we're going to do is we're going to just take every bit that you say, and I'm just going to overlay it in the questions we said earlier so it sounds completely cut up and weird.
Oh, good.
No, I have a couple new questions for you, and I don't know what Dan's going to do. He might retread some of the same territory, but... Overall, it should be fun.
You told me to delete all my audio.
I deleted all my audio, too.
Okay, I was about to, shit. Thank you for coming on to our show. It's great to have you.
Again, thank you guys so much for reaching out. It's really sweet of you.
It's no problem, man. I'm just glad you had the time with all your busy work that you have on your plate. So let's get into this. Let's go ahead and get you to give us a quick rundown of your vast experience in D&D and how it all came to be put into Theria, your setting for your podcast.
So, again, I've told this story a bunch, and it's mm-hmm. quite by accident, because it was a hobby I wanted to try. I've tried a bunch of stuff online, and in 2012... there was like one, maybe two. Rule 20, I think, was around, but there were a couple of virtual tabletops. Wizards had one that went along with 4E that no one remembers anymore.
Kind of,
right? It was decent. It was fine.
They gave you all the character sheets and everything.
You can build your own character and stuff off of it.
Yeah. And I think they just lost the license eventually, and then that's when we moved, because we hate change. But... our episode one is just me learning to play the game, because I had always wanted to try it. And I had a bunch of... I was doing a wrestling podcast at the time.
Ooh.
A pro wrestling podcast. And we'd been doing that for 3 or 4 years at that point. And it was... So Dungeons & Randomness actually started as... Oh, this will be like extra content for people. Like before Patreon. So it's like, yeah, this will just be extra content. No one's going to listen to this anyway. And then people gravitated a little more towards that than our wrestling stuff. We had kind of gotten burnt out on the wrestling thing. And it just kind of ballooned from there. One group turned into two, to three, to four groups. As I told you guys last time, I'm DMing 9 groups. 5 of them are in Theria. And then I'm just doing different stuff like Stars Without Number, Mutants and Masterminds, and Vampire the Masquerade. So that's... I have a hard time with moderation in all things. So I found a thing I liked, and I completely lost myself in it.
Awesome. Not to get too sidetracked, but what is your opinion of the state of wrestling at this point in time?
So I was a kid when I started watching. I was like 12, something like that. And I grew up through all the Attitude Era stuff. And you know, I have a love-hate relationship with wrestling. I love it. I hate most wrestling fans because they're so awful. But I love the product. I can't watch empty arena stuff. I can't do it. It's too weird.
Not hearing the crowd going all crazy.
Yeah, like, okay. Watching Drew McIntyre debut back in like 2007 and his entire journey through, you know, through learning the ropes and, you know, just becoming who he is now. And then he wins the world title to no one, to an empty, like him flexing with the title. Yeah. And you know that there should be this huge thing. It's the end of WrestleMania. It's like, yeah. And there's no one. and it's this tiny building, and it's so weird, and I can't. There's too much disconnect for me. It ruins it.
Yeah, it's not like whenever the Undertaker threw Mankind through the cage.
Yeah.
But so you've talked about how you have 9 groups right now, which is an awful lot. I know, just running one group, how difficult it is to get everybody on the same schedule to come at a certain time. How hard is it for you, specifically, to actually get everybody scheduled and to get there on time?
Well, I mean, our cast wants to do it. So, like, it's definitely... I think you have to meet players halfway, like realize that life happens. Don't bust someone's balls for being sick, or, you know, a relative getting sick or dying or something like that, or just, you know, their kids didn't let them sleep last night or something like that. You just, usually if you're understanding, people will meet you halfway, because we have an 18 person cast. And everyone is crazy good about meeting up. We try to play with each group at least once a month. And the people I play with on Patreon are really good about, you know, sitting down and getting done. Honestly, my partner Bree is the one who schedules most of this stuff. And she's gotten really good. It's pretty much like a well-oiled machine at this point, where we know who is going to have a tougher time, so we try and schedule them first, and then people who have looser schedules, maybe they don't have kids or something like that, we can kind of fit them in later. But we've always had a policy of, if one person can't make it, that group doesn't play. So that makes things challenging.
I know for a while there, you were Rob was having difficulties trying to get on the show for different reasons and stuff. But I get it. One of our guys on our show, he's got like 9 kids from like 6 different women, so it's challenging to get him to show up sometimes, or at least show up on time.
And that's the thing, is that, you know, real life is always going to get in the way, and it's tough to. It's inconceivable for some people, just like, yeah, I just need 3 hours where I'm not going to be needed anywhere else. And some people have a really hard time finding any time in their week where that's feasible.
Mm-hmm. I think it's good that you specifically are talking about this, because I know a lot of people that are getting into the game have a hard time figuring out, like, well, why can't they just show up? And knowing that, you know, life is more important than the game, you know, it's good to hear from somebody that actually does this for a living.
It's doable. You just gotta... you're gonna have to make caveats. Like, one, if you're the person who expects everyone else to show up, you gotta be where they are, right? Like, you can't tell them, I'm available for that. You have to be available all the time. If it's 2 in the morning, guess what? You're playing at 2 in the morning. That's and we used to do that. We used to play back-to-back sessions where we would end up at, like, 2, 3 in the morning, and everyone was so punchy, we realized, this doesn't work. And you're going to experiment here and there and find what works. I know everyone right now is kind of enjoying a boom to this, because it's with the quarantine, a lot of people are at home anyway. So it's like, yeah, let's record anytime, like that type of thing. It's been pretty decent for a lot of podcasts.
Not us. We record in-house, so it's kind of kneecapped us a little bit.
Got it.
I mean, we've been doing... recording, you know, through computer and everything and online, but it's just not the same feeling, you know, that you normally get from sitting at a table and pointing at each other like, what did you do? Why did you do
that? I totally get that. I started playing online, and only within the last few years have we played in person. So, like, we go to Dragon Con every year. We go to we try to go to that convention and meet up, and that's the only time we get to play, because we're so scattered. Like, we're in St. Louis and Kansas and LA, and, you know, we're everywhere. So it's impossible. It's not like a quick commute. So.
All right. On to the next question. Let's tackle this world of Theria that your multiple groups all play in at the same time. What is the structure of this world your campaign is set in? Like the... I'm trying to think of a good word. You got one, Craig, for me?
I don't know really where you're going with this, so...
I don't know either. Just tell us a little bit about the world that this group tackles.
So, okay, elevator pitch. It's obviously fantasy, but it's a little lower magic. We've spent many years balancing, trying to trim back on things that are just too wacky. You know, mind control, teleportation, anywhere you want, you know, that type of thing. And replace it with stuff that would be a bit more reasonable for the world. Monsters tend to hit harder, and groups have to be kind of smart about how they handle things to survive. And even then, sometimes you get lucky, sometimes you don't. And I'd say our podcast is much more about interpersonal dynamics and how they get along with people, because there are a lot of towns and cities on the main continent of Alara where most of the story has taken place. And I've watched people interact with leadership really well and really, really poorly. And that's led to full-scale war. So it's kind of cool to watch that kind of thing. And it's not just about the big bad necessarily, but it's about how people get along with each other and kind of learning to negotiate and realizing they can't just fix everything with a sword. I would say that's the quick pitch for it. There's... Again, we've spent a very long time trying to balance stuff. Like, okay, when 5e first came out, we kind of side-eyed it because it's like, man, that would be a lot of work to change it over. Eventually, we had to, and it was the greatest decision ever. But just for starters, we had to go through the player's handbook and look at all 400 spells and change anything that we needed to. And that was a lot of work. So... a lot of thought and care is put into it. It's not just willy-nilly.
Well, you gave an example of, like, Goodberry, how Goodberry can sustain an entire starving civilization because people just pull out the mistletoe and bam, Goodberry's.
Right, and I think that people, even wizards, I think people tend to think of it as just the party, right? It's like, okay, we had a simple rule. The party can't do anything that an NPC couldn't conceivably do, too. So... you talk about Goodberry as an example of something altruistic. So, yes, there's a druid in your party, has Goodberry. Let's say you're stranded in the desert. They can create water. That's great. That means that there are other people in the world with that power. Why would a farm ever have a bad harvest? Why would a town ever starve? Why would there be a desert at that point? Like, just, you could pretty much build anything anywhere you want. As long as you had some druids there, everyone would thrive. Same thing. If you have mind control spells, if you have teleportation spells, if you have, you know, stuff like that, that means a big bad, let's say, could have those powers too and conceivably be better at it than you. And I think a player would be really pissed if, let's say, you're squaring off with, let's say, you know, I don't know, an archmage or something like that, and you've been building this up for years, and you square off and the Archmage can just mind control somebody into attacking a friend or something like that, or just standing down. They'd be pissed. Like, I think it's something that rule of thumb where everyone should have this power or no one should, because the world wouldn't work. I think that's a good place to start.
Also, the ecological damages that could happen from just placing water randomly in places that it normally shouldn't be.
Totally. And I'm not smart enough to know all of that. Like, I didn't go to college for that. So I, like, okay, there's, okay, Jasper. Jasper's helped with the layout of the book and everything that we're designing. He's a volcanologist. Not as his trade now, but that used to be his thing. He studied volcanoes. And there's an island with volcanoes, and he pulled me aside. It's like, hey, if you ever needed to discuss tectonic plates and friction and how eruptions would work, it's like, yeah, I don't know anything about that. It's all Google for me. So yeah, actually tell me, give me some facts. I don't know. So that's really cool to talk to somebody who would have actual knowledge instead of something I just looked up in an article.
He threw out the rules of lava damage real quick. He's like, no, you're just dead.
It's like, that's not how lava would work.
You can walk on it for a little bit, and then you just die.
Yeah, he's like, I don't think 44 damage is correct. It's actually this. And by the way, it's more of a solid than a liquid. A lot of people get that wrong. Like,
monks can't run on it.
Yeah,
stop.
Yeah.
Speaking of Jasper, he really can take over a session because he's just got such a strong personality.
Sure.
And your game is really heavy in the roleplay side of D&D. How do you spread that out through all of your players, especially players like Mandy, who plays Iris, who she seems kind of, you know, she's kind of in the background. How do you bring those background characters to the forefront? And, you know, kind of temper Merrick, who is such a, you know, charismatic person.
Commanding presence.
Right. And there's a few tricks for that. One, when we were creating the groups, every group has one of those people. Like, I'd say with group A, it's probably Xavier. With group B, I'd say it's probably Ian. And with group C, it's probably Jasper. And when we were designing groups, we kind of planned it like a wedding party where we're planning out who's sitting where. And it's like, okay, who would complement each other? Who would help bring somebody who's more of a wallflower out? Because understanding why someone is that way is just as important as understanding that they are that way. Like, you mentioned Jasper being a commanding presence. That's because he wants to fix everything. Jasper as a person is a very, like, conflict-oriented person. If you listen to the words he's saying on the podcast, 90% of it is, we shouldn't be fighting because, or I want to fix this situation because. He's not trying to make Merrick the center of attention. He's just trying to fix a problem, and he sees himself as like, okay, well, I have an idea. If anyone has a better one, I'll shut up. And then you take someone like Lisa, who, when Lisa first got on the show, she was crazy quiet. And over time, you try to foster that that ability to chime in. So if you notice someone's been quiet in a session, ask them a random question. It's like, hey, Lisa, what would Ellerath be thinking right now? Like, what's, like, this should mean this. Like, I mean, this has got to be pretty impactful because Ellerath grew up here, and this, that's got to be some similarities. How, you know, so get them thinking about that type of thing and get them used to chiming in. Get, you know, you're putting them on the spot a bit, but you're also handing them a rope to get them out of that quicksand of being quiet. So you're not just like, hey, you say something. It's like, hey, how would you be feeling because this? Like, get them, you know, it hands them a little bit of something to work with so that they're not just on the spot and, you know, have to think of something role play real quick. They don't even have to say it in character, right? They could just, it's like, man, I think she'd be like this, and she'd present herself like this. I'd stand more aggressively, or I would look more angry as a result of this. Just kind of get them thinking about character stuff all the time.
Yeah, that's a problem I have, is I am very charismatic, and when I play, I play generally like a bard or a thief or charismatic players, and I think of creative ways to get out of situations where I don't have to fight, more or less. Mm-hmm. I will talk my way out of it to the point where their ears are bleeding from me talking to them, not me stabbing them. And then everybody else doesn't really know what to do because they don't want to step on my toes, and I feel bad about that, but they're not doing anything either.
Right.
So, you know, until somebody else steps up, I will take a seat back, but, you know, I'm going to try to talk my way out of any situation.
Look, I let you burn that one church and he got all power. Crazy. So, you know.
Another little trick you can do is like, okay, let's say you have an idea for your character. It's like, okay, I'm going to talk to him and I'm going to do this. You could turn to the group. It's like, okay, here's what I'm thinking. If anybody's got a better idea, jump in. Like, we could talk it out, but so that way you're running it by the group and it gets everybody thinking. It's like, okay, well, here's one option. Does anyone else have a better idea or something on par with that? Can we split up? Can we tackle it from, you know, so it feels like it's a group discussion and not just my character's going to go off and do this. While we're talking about talking and stuff like that, that kind of brings me to the idea of skill checks. Here's a hot button. Do you guys feel that a crit on a skill check should be an automatic pass?
I'm on the fence personally.
Okay.
Every time it happens, I always set that up as a rule at the beginning of the game. But for me, it can just depend on the group I'm dealing with, or it is a very hard thing to determine. I know Craig's answer by heart at this point, so Craig.
Well, it's kind of situational, depending on like if it's something severely like either easy or severely hard. As far as like charisma checks go, if you can talk your way and make a convincing argument, I'm not going to make you make a charisma roll. If that was a convincing enough argument and you have all the pieces, I'm not even going to make you roll for it. That sounds great to me. And other things, if you're like, well, my character was like a gymnast in the back before, like I used to work in the circus, and you're trying to do like some type of acrobatics check, I mean, I'm willing to give you advantage. I will work with people on these things. But generally speaking, I like to give like a crit is they did it so well that it good job. Go you. But a crit fail could just be the exact same. Anything could have happened. Maybe you slipped on some wet moss or something, and that could happen to anybody.
I like to, again, it's situational. I like to kind of tailor a difficulty check in my head as things like, okay, if a player says I want to jump to the moon, it's like, well, give me an athletics check, that, like, that's dumb. But like,
it's gotta be within reason,
right? Exactly. And I think for the situation, if you're tailoring, like, sometimes a crit isn't going to do it, but that's because it's just so far and beyond. It's like, yeah, I mean, this person's wanted to murder you for 3 years, and you're going to talk to them. It's like, but don't, and you roll a crit, that's not going to change their mind. It might buy you a couple of seconds, but I wouldn't even ask that. If it's something impossible, I wouldn't even ask him to roll. Yeah. It would just be like, hey, I don't think you're going to be able to talk your way out of this one, but that's rare. I'm just not in the camp of a crit is an automatic success every time for skill checks.
Yeah, to me, it's got to be like within reason. Like,
right.
You can't just say, I'm going to kick this can and it's going to like go so fast it's going to be like a bullet and blow this guy's head off. You know what I mean? Like, that, it's, there's no conceivable way, even freaking the mountain,
man,
the mountain kicking that can isn't going to, you know, do that. And he's the strongest man in the world, you know?
Right.
So, like, but if you say, sense. I want to, like, steamroll this door off its hinges, I can conceivably say, if you roll enough, as long as it's not, like, a cast iron door, you could probably knock it down.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. That makes total sense. Okay. I just wanted to pick you guys' brain.
It's kind of a rough pitch whenever a rogue gets a one on the dice, right? But their skill bonus is like 25.
Right.
Stuff. It's like, so they got a 26 on stealth, but they still fail. It kind of hurts me personally. It would be like, you didn't do it. It's fine. Even with all the magic and the natural skill you've developed over a career of whatever you've been doing.
But see, on the flip side, I don't think a one should be an automatic failure. If you're that innately good at something,
yeah,
you should at least fail with style, like a cat. Like, if a cat falls off something and then on their feet, it's like, I meant to do that. Like, it's kind of that. Like, you're not going to outright look like a blundering idiot, but you might not completely succeed at the thing you were trying to do.
Right. Something I did want to pick your brain on, because you mentioned wars on the capital and everything have happened due to group influence. Are all the groups around the same power strength as a groups, or
they started that way? But I mean, as people make decisions, as people, yeah. So like, one group might surge ahead by two or three levels. One group might lag behind, and that, like, it depends on where they are and what they're doing. Because I'm a big proponent of not just awarding experience for fights, but also being smart enough to avoid fights and handle things diplomatically or solve problems in different ways. So I think the other way breeds murder hobos, where they're just, it's like, well, we got to kill the thing or we don't level up. Like, I think if you reinforce that in their head early on, it's like, yeah, you don't, there are other ways. There's peace treaties and stuff like that. If you, you know, so I think it goes up and down, but they're all around within like two levels of each other, somewhere in there for the most part.
Okay.
They're also on different times as well. Not yes. everybody is on the same day. So
yeah, to I'm not add saying complexity, because it wasn't one, hard enough.
Yeah, one group is maybe a week or ahead of another group, but that's not going to mean that they're going to like jump like three levels, unless somebody right. out of somewhere just kind of gives them three levels. But
quick, kill the lich, stun lock him. Yeah. We're good.
And then like there's a group on another continent. There's a group on, you know, so there's a lot. There's a lot to balance, but if you pay attention to keep good notes, it's not as hard as it seems.
So for me personally, I've had some issues with people metagaming in the past, especially like metagaming monsters. Dan, he's been a DM before, and he knows certain, like, everybody knows a regular-ass goblin has 7 hit points, and, you know, as if you've been a DM, you know it's got 7 hit points. And it's hard for him not to get that, keep that information in his mind and not use it. I've found that just changing the name simply is easy enough to get them to where they're not thinking about that. You know, in our first story arc in Project Nova, we were fighting goblins, hobgoblins, all the goblins, but because of their level. But I changed their name to Ravengers, and that completely threw them off. And every time I was describing their attacks, they didn't know what to expect. Instead of a short sword, they were clawing them. Instead of shooting a short bow, they were spitting ichor out their mouth, and it was hardening as it was going through the air. They didn't know how to react because they've never fought that before. And it was right. just as simple as changing the name. How do you go about fighting people who have meta issues?
It's rare.
Sound like I have a trick.
I think people have gotten really good about that. I'd say early on, the first few years of the show, there were a few people who would take knowledge of, like, it's like, oh, we're going to be fighting vampires. Well, guess what? We're going to need this, 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 you know, and they just have, they kind of come loaded for bear, whether their characters would know about what it's like. Does your character know anything about vampires? No. Well, then why do you have all this holy water? Why are you readying all your radiant spells? How do you know? So if you explain it to them like that, usually people go, oh yeah, okay. And that's a really hard skill to develop. Like, if you've never played a role-playing game before, or if you're just used to playing video games or something like that, you're used to hoarding potions and getting ready for, you know, boss fights, and it's been ingrained in our heads since we were little kids, and it's really tough to tell people, okay, yes, that will give you a big edge, and you might win, but you need to purposefully do the wrong thing right now because your character wouldn't know that. That's a really hard thing for a lot of people to wrap their head around. It's like, wait, I'm purposefully handicapping myself to do this? So what I try to do is offer them a slight XP bump or something like that, just some kind of reward. I'll offer them, it's like, okay, you know what? You're going to get inspiration because you purposefully did the thing that hurt your character, but it was in character. You made the right decision because everything you said up until now reinforced that. That makes perfect sense. It is tough to train that out of somebody, though, because no one likes to lose. Like, especially the longer a campaign goes on, the higher the stakes are. If you've been playing a character for a year, 2 years, 3 years, and you get up to, like, let's say level 9, 10, 11, and you're in a fight where it's like, oh, I could lose, and it's permadeath. Oh, God. Like, there's that panic, and you might start pulling out stops that you normally wouldn't. And a gentle reminder of, like, hey, would your character know that? Usually kind of gets people back on the right track.
Yeah, I thought that was a great question to ask you, because, you know, you have changed the characters and the monsters and stuff, and you've been playing with so many different people, that, you know, rewarding them to do that is a really good way. I had never thought of to you know, go about it that way. I just normally, like I said, I change the name of them, and that completely throws them off. It's just as simple as that.
Here's something really simple, too. So Wizards gives you... So, okay, let's say you're playing with a goblin. Yeah, standard, they have 7 hit points. You can also just roll for their hit points individually, mm-hmm. each one of them. Because I always think of it like this. not every person is built the same. Why would every monster be built the exact same? There are hardier goblins. There are smaller, runtier goblins. They're, you know, you don't have to change their stats, but, you know, they also roll. You can have them roll for damage instead of do base damage. It's the same thing with hit points. You know, mix it up so a player can't absolutely bank on. It's like, okay, this damage is going to absolutely kill this, and I can move on. Mixing stuff up in combat does a lot to make people think on the fly. One of the things that we're probably going to be changing in Arc 4 is having people roll for initiative every round, which it's a good way to simulate people, you know, changing things up in combat. It's not, it makes it feel a little less like a turn-based RPG, and like, oh, things are moving on the fly. Maybe someone stepped in mud and they slipped or something like that. You can kind of simulate things.
I mean, I just rolled like multiple D6 for goblin health, and they all had above 10 HP, so the party's dead.
Well, and that's the flip side, like teaching, like, okay, this seems really harsh, but teaching a group that it's like, yeah, you're not going to win every fight just because we're playing, like, not every fight is tailored to you in Theria. I'm not picking creatures that are your level. The creatures exist in this area that exist in this area. If you stumble into an area where there are werewolves and you're level 2, they're still werewolves. They're still going to tear you to shreds. They're still going, you know, learn that and come back later. Like, that's a good lesson for people to learn. Like, the world isn't going to wait on me. No.
Well, we are coming to the end of the show, but there was one more thing I wanted to ask you, because have you just constantly been a GM, or have you been a player sometimes?
99.9% of the time, I'm a GM. I have played in, I think, 2 games. and it was just one-shot type stuff. I played in a game Bree ran, and we did a team up with the Super Effective podcast, and they were really cool. They ran like a Pokemon themed thing, and I did a very terrible job because my Pokemon knowledge ends at Red and Blue, and
that's all you need.
You would be surprised. Apparently there were more games released. Did you know? Like,
you're saying you didn't realize that fairy type was strong against certain other types?
Because
they decided to make fairy types super strong.
I didn't have time to get my degree in Pokemon.
I thought Bree was like a wizard at Pokemon. I'm like, why is she doing D&D? Why isn't she full-time Pokemon?
Dude, Bree believes in what I call regimented fun, where she'll break down spreadsheets for every type, and like she had a living Pokedex. Like, she had everything. Like, it was insane, and it didn't even seem fun at some points, but it was a goal to complete, and I totally get it. If there was trophies to collect in Pokemon, she'd have them all.
How's she handling Animal Crossing?
I think she's developing spreadsheets to get the villagers she wants. She made a list of the ones she wanted and a hierarchy of what, you know, how to get them and all that.
Sounds like me playing Monster Hunter.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Exactly, yes.
Last question. Favorite monster?
Ooh,
either you've created or have seen in the regular monster manuals.
Okay, I'll give you two real quick, because I'm a sucker for dragons. I just love dragons. I love characterizing them and doing stuff with them and all that. Favorite monster that we've created might be the Clicor right now, which is this essentially big demonic heavy that is completely blind but feels through tremor sense, so it'll run and just throw its entire body at someone and use these giant arms and claws to beat it to death, and just long after it's dead just keep fucking hitting it, and it's super fun. Like, they're horrifying. They're in the book. We got art done and everything. I love them. But yeah, that's probably it right now. That'll change like in a year.
Dan, before we go into insight, I have a question for, I would like to know if you have any questions for us.
Okay.
Going in, how blind. Was it to sit? Not knowing anything about us.
What, how was it to sit down and do this again? Was there, was there a moment yesterday when you're like, yeah, just send the audio over? And I went, wait, what? Was there a point where you're like, this fucking guy? Was there one point? No? Okay.
At the very beginning where I saw you like syncing up with us and everything, I never saw your hand like go to a mouse to hit start recording.
I thought you
like
two were syncing up the audio, I thought it was a redundancy. Like both of you were recording in case someone did. It's like, that's really good. That's really professional. And I'm sitting here going, doo, doo, doo. I don't remember reading, you have to record your own audio. No, and
it was completely my fault. I should have told you. So I wasn't mad at all. I kept my wife's like, he didn't record his audio. Oh, my God, what are you going to do? I was like, we'll just do it tomorrow. It's not a big deal. I looked at her and I go, we got him by the balls now. He's going to feel so bad.
And congrats, I do. I felt it. It's like, that there's that it's that feeling of like, oh, there's a pop quiz that I didn't study for. It's like, yeah, man, that was great. Just send your audio whenever. It's like, what?
I thought you had everything already recording at the time. I was like, man, he just starts recording.
Here's the thing: if this were on Skype, I'd have three fucking recordings of it. But it's because we're on Discord, and I don't use Discord all that much. So yeah, I can make excuses all day.
All right. I don't trust like my internet is god awful, so it like cuts in and out.
There's
so
a bit of
if we just
stuttering.
All individually record our audio, everything seems to go smooth. Just send it to me, I'll edit it all. It's great, but I knew you felt worse than we did. I was just like, you know, it happens. I'm not really worried about it. So,
dude, absolutely, I felt worse. that is a good attitude to have. Redundancies are great. In the 8 years we've been doing this, I think I've lost two or three episodes and we had to do them over again. And that is the worst feeling, to have a great session and then go to the group. It's like, so guys, like, it is the worst feeling in the world. And sometimes tech issues happen. It's not going to be right 100% of the time. So,
yeah, I've lost like 30 minutes of one episode and I didn't, I was like, what
is
worse,
going on? I think.
And then whenever we recorded the next time to try to re-record it, the person that we needed to be there couldn't show up till like later. So we had to pretend like he was there the whole time while we re-recorded it. So it actually made sense he came back. So it was just ridiculous, but you know, it happens. It's not a big deal. I just thought it was funny that, you know, you were like devastated and I'm over here, no man, it's not a big deal. It's great. And then I'm over looking at my wife. Oh, we got him. We got him now.
Dude, I'm flogging myself. It's like, no, Dobby doesn't deserve a second chance.
All right. Well, we are coming to the end of the show. So we're going on to our last segment of the show, which is the insight part of it, where we ask our guests and ourselves to give out a helpful piece of insight that people can take forward. And we'll start with you, Jason.
Well, okay, the first time we did this, I talked about treating your players well, which that is the first thing I would tell anybody. It just essentially breaks down to treat your players well, and they'll treat you well back, and it makes the game better as a whole. Another piece of advice I would give somebody is don't take rules as written as the law. They're there as guidelines, right? Like we were talking about the goblin thing. That's fine. They have 7 hit points or whatever. And I think you could also roll like 2d4 or something, you know, and that's fine. Like you can change it. If you think these goblins would be harder or hardier in this area, roll 2d8 plus something. It's fine. Like they're just there as guidelines. Everything in these books are meant to give you a starting point. And there are people who pick up the books and don't run anything any other way. Right? You could pick up Strahd and run it exactly that way. Or you can pick up a book and say, that's a great idea. I want to expand on that. I want to, like, we ended up making a whole custom class. And it started with the idea of like scions, but then I realized very quickly, it's like, I've homebrewed this to the point where these aren't scions anymore. And it's a completely new class that's going to be in the book, and it's 30 pages of stuff. It's this huge, expansive, you know, class that you're basically tapping into emotions to unleash these torrents of energy, and each one represent, you know, like fear operates different than joy and anger and all that stuff. And that's just because we went off script. It's like, well, let's test this. Let's see what happens with this. create a weapon that's overpowered. Create a, you know, just to see where those boundaries are and test it. And don't be afraid of someone coming to you, because they will, especially if you're putting it online. Someone's going to come to you with an actually and tell you, goblins only have this. You're cheating. Because a lot of people had the mentality of the DM is against the players. I highly disagree with that, because you're all playing a game, and winning as the DM is the easiest friggin' thing in the world. I can stack the deck. That goblins now have 28 AC. Fuck you. Like, anyone can stack the deck as the DM. It's the easiest thing in the world. That's not fun. The challenge is giving players just enough challenge that they could lose, but make it, you know, entertaining, make it accessible too. A good fight is balanced between those two things. So yeah, just go off script, man. Do your own thing. Check things out. Try things. The worst that's going to be is a stellar disappointment, and then you go back on it.
Awesome. Actually, all goblins having 28 AC is improbable unless they're a high level cleric. All right, Craig, what's your piece of insight? So, thank you for your insight.
Last time I said that, you know, before we lost the recording, you should take risks. Don't be afraid to don't be afraid to completely scrap your recording and try something new. But today I'm going to say that, Jason, you touched on this earlier. You don't have to win every fight. You don't have to fight everything. Don't be afraid to run. If things look like you're playing Pokemon and you can hear the doot 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 because your health is getting low, don't be afraid to get the hell out of there. You know, you can live to fight another day, get stronger, come back, and then kick their ass, you know. So that's my insight for the day.
Okay, I actually have a piece of insight instead of last time, which I didn't, because I was feeling like, I was like, oh, I can't compare to this, but I think I've got one. When playing with a new group, except maybe you know one of the other people who's an experienced player, don't feel like you have to set your game to the experienced player, because then the new guys are going to be just lost completely. Set it at the new guy's pace a little bit, and then maybe the more experienced guy can help them and prop them up. Because you always want to have new players have a fun experience, and if they get to explore more, learn more, without you just outright taking the bat to their knees, they'll be like, I'll share this with my friends, and then they'll develop into better players, and then they'll become a DM. It's that pay it forward mentality, right? Start off small and you can work your way out. But yeah, so don't feel like you have to set it to the high scale every single game. Just pace out the group. If they're getting it, you can roll it along. So
it's also, I mean, that could be a real boon to you as a DM. If you have someone coming in who knows the rules, has played a bunch, and you have a bunch of newer people, use them as like, it's like, hey, help them with the rules, tutor them, like answer a question if they have it, that type of thing. It's like getting people to play Magic the Gathering for the first time. It's like, yeah, here's a deck, man. Here you go. I'm going to get you hooked so I'll have someone to play with forever.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, you treat them well, they're going to come back usually.
Suggested started Magic deck.
Okay.
Greens, right?
I would say, okay, green's the most accessible because it's the most like, hey, you have monsters that get bigger, they attack, boom. Green or red, probably, depending on how someone... Never give them a blue deck to start with. That's just terrible. Don't do that. No. Don't do that to somebody. Because one, they're not going to make any friends with counter spells, and they're not. That's not how you make friends. So, yeah.
I steal all your land.
Oh, my God.
Son of a... All right. Well, Jason, thank you so much for joining us on Ready, Set, Roll Insight. Do you have anything you want to plug? Maybe that book you've been talking about.
I'm a terrible businessman. So for the last year, we did a Kickstarter last year, and we raised $87,000 to make a setting book. And, well, we did it. We didn't just take your money and run. We've been doing weekly book meetings and all that. People who know about it, pre-orders are locked down right now, but we have a 390-page book coming your way to Amazon this summer. just as soon as we get him back from the printers, which could be any time because the world is on fire currently. But that's okay. You'll have it for summertime, and there is everything in this book. There are literally hundreds of tables, random creation for classes, a brand new class to sit and play with. There are over 20 towns and cities on the continent of Alara, fully giving you history, giving you knowledge into where the shops are and everything to get, maps. And in the back, there are almost 300 NPCs with stats, with art, with everything. We have we spared no expense. So
wow,
it is a lot. So I really hope you guys pick that up and enjoy it.
Were you, I think you were talking about this, if I might be mistaken, tell me. Did you all have like a stretch goal of like putting your own stats for each and every person on the show? Did you hit that?
Yep, we did. So we have artwork of everybody on the cast and stats and like weaknesses and strengths and little personal histories for each one. When I say that there are NPCs, I don't mean that there's a quick stat block and then we move on. I mean, everyone gets a backstory, everyone gets stats, and there are almost 300 of them. It's a lot. So it's a 390-page book. It's called The Adventurer's Guide to Theria, Volume 1. And again, it should be available by like June or July, hopefully.
Awesome. Well, once again, thank you everybody for listening to Ready, Set, Roll Insight with our guest Jason Massey of Dungeons and Randomness. His show will be in the link below. And as always, you all have a wonderful day and a wonderful time out there, and be safe. All right. Goodbye.
Bye, guys.
Later.
All right. And everybody can hit stop.
Oh, yeah. Wait, I was supposed to record this one, too?
I knew you were going to make that joke. Saw it coming from a mile away.